This audio was revised on January 24, 2012. I deleted references to the heretic Thomas Aquinas and to the pagan Seneca. The date is February 26, the year 2006, Quinquagesima Sunday. We're reading from Necessity of Exterior Mortification. St. Gregory says that no man is fit to be a minister of God. Is this set down on the low mark? So not the high, yeah. No man is fit to be a minister of God and to offer the sacrifice at the altar unless he has first sacrificed himself entirely to God. And St. Ambrose writes, this is a primitive sacrifice, that everyone offers himself first to God in order afterwards to be able to offer his gift. And long before the Redeemer said, quote, unless the grain of wheat falling into the ground die, itself remaineth alone. He then who wishes to bring forth fruits of eternal life must die to himself. That is, he must desire nothing of his own satisfaction, and as St. Gregory has written, he must embrace all that is mortifying to the flesh. He who is dead to himself must, according to Lanspergius, live in the world as if he saw nothing, heard nothing, as if nothing disturbed, and as if nothing gave him content but God. For, says Jesus Christ, he that will save his life shall lose it all. Everything is in the eyes of God, done for God. Happy loss, exclaims St. Hilary, when everything in this world and even life itself is lost in order to follow Jesus Christ and to gain eternal glory. See, the spiritual, the soul is the most important of all. St. Bernard says that where there are no other reason for giving ourselves entirely to God, it would be enough to know that God has given himself entirely to us. But to give ourselves to God without reserve, it is necessary to banish from the heart every earthly desire. Whenever charity is augmented, says St. Augustine, their cupidity is diminished. Freedom from all cupidity is perfection. We must desire God above all things, and these are our ultimate goal, and that nothing love anything more than God on this earth. And then God will give us good desires, spiritual desires, and seeking him. And even in the things of this world, we would see God in it. We turn them into spiritual things. He who least desires the goods of the earth loves God the most. He who desires nothing loves God perfectly. These people we say, well, the biggest problem, they love the earth so much, they don't want to see the second coming or the nuclear holocaust or a bomb, or they don't want to get killed because this is all they've got. They covet the earth. They love. They don't believe in God. They don't really, really, really believe in paradise, the world to come, in God. Or else they would not have their focused intention solely on the earth. And people that do that are carnal, are doomed, or damned. They have no hope. They're going to be overcome by all the fears of the world because that's all they got. And all, they have no hope in God, really. So that's what he's just trying to say. Love God and the spiritual things above everything. In the preceding instruction, we have spoken of interior mortification. We can get into that later in Lent. We have time. We shall now speak of external mortification, or the mortification of the senses. And we're talking about this especially because in the current days, everyone denies exterior mortification. They don't believe you need to do it. You know, all you got to do is pray, and they talk about internal mortification, but you don't got to do the old mortifications and penances anymore. So without that, you're doomed. You're damned. You cannot be saved. As I said a couple weeks ago. This species of mortification is also necessary because on account of sin, our flesh wars, as the apostle said of himself, against reason and is an enemy to our salvation. Quote, I see another law in my members fighting against the law of my mind. You know who said that? St. Paul. That is the concupiscence of the flesh that is struggling with reason to overcome it. It is necessary to understand that the soul must bring the body under subjection or the body will trample on the soul. And then you're doomed. You're going against reason. You're going against natural law. Even you're going against your salvation even. God has given us senses that we employ them, not as we please, but as he directs. Hence, we must mortify the desires that are contrary to the divine law. Quote, they that are Christ's have crucified their flesh with the vices and concupiscences. Hence the saints have been so careful to macerate the flesh. I like the use of macerate. Chop it up like chopped beef, you know. Cut themselves up to bloody to macerate their flesh. St. Peter of Alcantara proposed never to give any indulgence to the body and observed his resolution till death. St. Bernard maltreated his body to such a degree that at death he asked its pardon. St. Teresa used to say that, quote, it would be silliness to imagine that God admits to his friendship persons who seek their own ease and convenience, end quote. And another place she says, souls that are truly love God cannot ask for comforts. And see, that's why people fall away. That's why David Irving fell away in this one case coming up, because he's not Catholic, and obviously he's not of good will yet, because he wasn't corresponding to God's grace, and as soon as they took his good food away and some comforts away, he broke.
Yeah.
And we read that with a lot of the martyrs, though, even when their flesh is being torn apart, they don't break. I mean, this, because they already crucified themselves in order to prepare to die. But think it, when people don't have this hope and they don't have God's grace, how can they withstand the world? It says, and St. Ambrose has written that he who does not cease to indulge the body shall cease to please God. So you have a choice. Either you're going to indulge the body or you're going to please God. Either you're going to keep the body at bay and use all your efforts to serve God, you're going to keep it in subjection to God, to the soul, or it's going to be the other way around. According to St. Augustine, he who subjects reason to the flesh, is a monster that walks with his head downwards and his feet upwards. I love these examples. How great that is. How true that is. It's like his head buried in it, you know. We are born for a more noble end than to be the slaves of a body. St. Gregory, even the natural law can know that. St. Gregory says that by gratifying the desires of the flesh, we only nourish enemies. St. Ambrose weeps over the misfortune of Solomon, saying that the unhappy king had the glory of building the temple of God, but that it would have been far better for him to preserve to God the temple of his body, for the gratification of which he lost his body, his soul, and his God. A man mounted on a furious horse must always keep the reins tight. It is thus we must treat the body, always keeping in subjection. St. Bernard says that we ought to treat the flesh as a physician treats a patient who seeks what is noxious and refuses what is conducive to his health. Were a physician, in order to please a sick man, to give him what he should cause his death, would he not be guilty of cruelty? And in like manner, let us be persuaded that to indulge the body is not charity, but the greatest act of cruelty we can commit against ourselves, because for a momentary indulgence of the flesh, we condemn the soul to an eternity of torments, and even torments in this life, because you suffer all kinds of maladies when you're out of proportion with your sicknesses and diseases and confoundments and just all kinds of physical torments, even when you're not controlling your flesh. It's just a lose-lose situation here. And you don't realize if you had a temporary pleasure of gluttony or drunkenness or whatever you're doing that is extraordinary, you're not controlling. Such is the language of St. Bernard. Such a charity destroys charity. Such a charity, see? That's that false charity, to let people do whatever they want. They say that's charity. He's saying such a charity destroys charity. Such a mercy is full of cruelty. It's not true mercy, it's cruel. For in such a manner, the body is served, but the soul is destroyed. You're absolutely, the soul is absolutely destroyed into oblivion, which is the only hope where you're going to have life is by tending to your soul, and you end up in hell forever on top of it. In a word, we must change our palate and follow the admonition of our Lord to St. Francis. If you desire me, take what is bitter as sweets, and what is sweet as bitter. Let us now attend to the fruits of eternal external mortification. First, it satisfies for the pains due to the pleasures in which we have indulged. Those pains are far milder in this than in the next life. St. Antonine relates that an angel proposed to a sick man the choice of remaining 3 days in purgatory or being confined for 2 years in his bed by the infirmity under which he labored. The sick man chose the 3 days in purgatory, which is smart because he's going to go to heaven. Yeah. But here's the point. He's making a different point in here. Yeah, it was a true move. It was the right thing to do. But here's what he says. Here's the point he's making in this, though. But he was scarcely an hour there, and he began to complain to the angel that his purgatory, instead of continuing for 3 days, had lasted for several years. What, replied the angel, your body is still warm on the bed of death, and you speak of years. So he's saying, so even though we do want to go, don't even try to go to purgatory. Do your purgatory here, is what he's saying. Do your mortification here. It's easier than if God's going to have to burn it off of you in purgatory. See? He goes, your body's still warm on the bed. You speak of years. Anybody who's had a real bad sickness, really bad, and it's the middle of the night and you're up around rolling in bed, 1 minute is like an eternity. Yeah. 1 minute is like an hour. And 1 hour is like a whole day. And the whole night seems like an eternity. Any sick man can tell you this. If you're ever really sick in your life, where you stayed up through a night of a really bad sickness, anyone will tell you that on earth. Can you imagine what it's like in purgatory? Well, I mean, she says, if you do not wish to be punished, be your own judge. Chastise and amend yourself. by voluntary mortifications. Secondly, mortification detaches the soul from earthly pleasures and gives her a faculty of flying to God and of uniting herself with Him. Really, the bonus of all this is that God's going to fill you with such good things. It's a win-win.
Yeah.
Now I have all these good desires. I got all the time to do it. And I have all the energy to do it.
Yeah.
And I all have the might to do it. And I'm infused with the love of God to do it. So it's a win-win situation. It's really, you can say, I'm doing it for a selfish purpose even. Because really, we are supposed to be selfish about ourselves. That's the one thing we have to covet is our soul more than anything. We have to be selfish about our own salvation.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really a win-win if once you get that. It's like a horse, you know, who's real wild. Once you tame him, you know, he runs beautiful. He looks beautiful. You take care of him real nice. That's a happy horse.
Yeah.
I mean, it takes a little bit maybe to tame him, you know, and then you fix him up, clean him, tame him, and all that. He's good, real orderly. And we're like that. If the flesh is not mortified and depressed, the soul will never be able to rise herself up to God. Anyway, all of us know if we ever ate a little too much or we're feeling a little bit over much or whatever, you can't concentrate as much the next day or something. Sometimes that'll happen. You know, although I don't think I've seen any of us commit the type of sin which you say was over total gluttony, where you're just stuffing yourself like the Romans to the point where you're thrown up and getting sick. That's an obvious gluttony.
Yeah.
There's other ones that are minor things that could, where you ate a little too much even, and that bothers you.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, boy, I didn't even, just a little too much and I'm bothered, you know.
Yeah.
Like on feasting days when you are allowed to eat a little more. But, you know, the fact that if you do keep your fast when you're supposed to, you'll never get so out of line. You'll, even during the feast days, you'll be able to keep yourself in control. He gets into that, this guy, really well. About how, you know, the glutton sits down at the table and he eats as much as is on the table. He just keeps eating. It tastes good. He keeps stuffing his face with it. Give me more. And until he gets sick.
What guy, David?
Oh, that was great. What a great. Oh, and that scene. He one of the saints, that it goes with that scene. He said, he's talking about abstinence, because you'll read it, but you'll read it later. Telling a story about a man, a monk or a brother, or just a Catholic that was under the ban of abstinence, and so he can only eat fish. And it was on a long journey, went to the guy's house, and the guy gave him fish. And he says, can't you give me some of that cooked chicken over there, that roast up that chicken or whatever? As soon as he ate the chicken, he choked on the first bone and died. And so the guy was saying, well, that doesn't happen to everybody. He says, if it did, he says, at least maybe it should happen, something like that should happen to let you know that even though that doesn't happen to you, you committed a mortal sin.
Yeah, right.
If you're breaking the church abstinence laws, that's a mortal sin.
Yeah.
If you break fasting laws, it's a mortal sin. And he's saying this was a dramatic example. And like when you were seeing that movie, Dave, when a guy just choked on the bone, he was such a pig. He was eating, and Joan of Arc too. That one guy was eating all the chick. The guy was. Oh, so he goes. Only by mortification can the soul rise to heavenly things. Thirdly, penance merits for us eternal goods, as Saint Peter of Alcantara revealed from heaven to Saint Teresa, saying, "Oh, happy penance that has merited me so much glory." Now, either you believe these stories or not, we believe them. So this idea of penance and mortification is thrown out long before Vatican II also, as we know. It's been going up since the Protestant revolts, is on a steady decline. So that the idea of penance and mortification is totally out the window. So people don't even do it anymore. You know, they might use a few examples. Yeah, you could also be very ascetic and do all these mortifications and go to hell, but that's no excuse for us not to do it.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm a charismatic, pray to rosary, should I not pray it? You know what I mean? That's an excuse. It's true. We moderate ourselves by having feasting days. We balance ourselves. But don't listen to those people, you know, they try to use the examples of the ascetics that went bad or something. But all your people today, none of them believe you have to do any mortifications. None.
Yeah.
They just don't believe. Jesus himself had to do it and did do it. He went fasted for 40 days, suffered the passion, but you don't got to do it? The Almighty God himself? What an arrogance. And you will not be saved if you don't do it. Hence the saints have endeavored to mortify the flesh continually and to the best of their ability. And you will find out when you get yourself, for instance, used to a penitential work. Let's say we sleep on meager beds, all of us. We don't have any fancy beds. We have like very small mattress, almost like sleeping on the floor. Sometimes you can even sleep on the floor if you want. But even that's fine. And then even if you got used to sleeping on the floor, that's good. I mean, and the point is, once you get used to that, though, you get used to it. It's actually good. You go on a big fluffy bed and I get overwhelmed. I don't know what to do. I don't know. I feel almost guilty. I mean, if you get into this big fluffy bed or something, it doesn't feel right. But once you get your body used to this toughness, it's normal.
Yeah.
You don't even feel like you're doing mortification anymore, but you are.
Yeah.
Other people will look at you and they think it's hard what you're doing, but you got used to it. Mm-hmm. So can you go up to anybody who's living in a cold area, like the Alaskan people live in these igloos and stuff? They're toughened, hardened under the skins, and there's nothing to them. But once you start getting hardened like this, the whole idea is to be taking your attention away from the need of so many things in the world. You can spend more of your time on God, and people, and the devil cannot hold these things against you by tempting you with them. He loses that whole avenue of worldly luxuries to tempt you with, which is a big part of his arsenal. Mm-hmm. That's all gone now.
Yeah.
You know, if you're mortifying yourself and God's grace is with you, he can't tempt you with luxurious food. He can't tempt you with food, even if you should have to starve to death. He can't tempt you with a comfortable bed that you've gotten used to. You know, so it's a good sign for people. That's what this. Once you get into that stage of mortification, even you don't even want to go back into these other things.
No.
You don't even want that. Now we'll just finish this little paragraph he has here, which is called "Practice of Exterior Mortification." And then when I finish this, I'm going to attach it to the beginning of that other Lent sermon I gave last week. And then either next week or another, we'll read this from this, which is good too. And he goes on to part two here, practice of exterior mortification. If we have not fervor to mortify the body by great penances, let us at least practice some little mortifications. Let us bear with patience the pains that happens to us. For example, let us submit in peace to the inconvenience and want of sleep, the disagreeable smell that we feel in attending the dying, to the annoyance we experience in going to hear confessions of persons confined in prison. And he's talking to priests now in that area. And hearing the confessions of the poor and the ignorant. And when they're not making sense, it's hard to understand them. And to similar occasions of pain or trouble. Let us at least deprive ourselves from time to time of some lawful pleasure. Whoever does everything that is allowed will soon do what is not allowed. If you're doing everything, oh, that's allowed, that's allowed, that's, and you're doing everything which is allowed to the limit, and not practice involuntary money, pretty soon you're going to do what's not allowed. You're going to go to more. He who wishes to indulge in all gratifications that are in themselves lawful will not abstain long from unlawful pleasures. Sooner you're going to start wanting to do more, you get covetousness. You become voracious. Your appetite becomes, you can't fill it no more. The great servant of God used to say that God has given us earthly goods not only for our delight, but also that we might have a means of showing our gratitude to him by abstaining from pleasures and giving him back his own gifts and proof of our love. For as St. Gregory writes, he who is accustomed to renounce lawful gratifications easily abstains from forbidden pleasures. Now, I want to just get one part on the back here and then we'll end it, because then he gets into the specific cases and so does he, and we're going to go back and forth on that. But I want to get into involuntary mortifications, which he just started here. So he's talking about, it's even a penance to accept what God sends you, like your pains of every day, your physical, the cold, the heat. And if you do your best to alleviate it to somewhat, but be careful not to pamper yourself and accept what he sends you, and that's penance. And here he gets into that also, as we were just began on it. He calls this four involuntary mortifications. If we have not courage to mortify the flesh by works of penance, let us least endeavor to accept with penance the mortifications arising from infirmities, the heat and the cold that God sends us. But we still have to, and he's saying that the more you mortify your flesh the other way, the less of those other infirmities God will send you. Quote, hasten, O Lord, hasten to wound thy servants with thy sacred wounds, lest they be wounded by the deadly wounds of vice, end quote. This we too should say when we are afflicted with sickness and pains. Lord, chastise me with those healing wounds, that I may be freed from the deadly wounds of the flesh. Or let us say with St. Bernard, quote, it is just that he should be bowed down and become sad who has despised thee, O Lord. Yes, my God, it is just that I who have insulted you should suffer affliction. I have been condemned to eternal death. Let me then be crucified in this life, that I may not be tormented for eternity in the next. Let us at least bear the pains that God sends us. A certain author well observes that a person who does not embrace voluntary pains will scarcely bear involuntary sufferings with perfect patience. And on the other hand, God will cease to chastise the sinner who voluntarily punishes himself for his sins. End quote. Beautiful. In the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Ghost. Amen.
Yes, Lord. And I take this pain from me, is chastising now, and say, but spare my soul.
Oh, yeah, right, right. Whatever he sends you. Banging your head, stubbing your toe on a rock. You think these things are small. No, they're not small. Staying in the shower for 30 seconds cold on purpose. He'll get your grace. Anything. You know, the devil tries to fool you by thinking to make light of it. Well, this little bit of discipline I'm whipping, I'm not shedding blood or it hurts. He even hurt. Damn, yeah. It's not doing. It is doing. Just do it. Don't think it's not doing anything. Set yourself down and do anything. Do something. Start out and do something to give yourself pain. And then God will increase it if he wants you to increase it. The devil fools you. He makes you think that that little scourging is nothing. What's that doing? But don't just do it. It is doing. It is making a big difference. God's looking at that. And then by you getting in the habit of doing it, you can increase it or decrease it at God's good pleasure. But if you're not doing it, you're not doing it. It's like, yeah, how could you play a football game if you don't even start the game? If you don't put the uniform on and get started. That's the idea of penances. You go into shower and you say, well, I'm not going to be like maybe St. Patrick, where he did the whole mat and louse in ice cold up to his neck in an ice cold lake. Well, I'm only going into the shower for 10, 30 seconds under cold. That's nothing. No, but it is something. Do it. It's a beginning. And people fool themselves. Because even you could, then Patrick could have said, what about this other guy who's in the cold lake for 3 hours? I mean, there's always somebody who may be doing more, or maybe more you think you can do. But I think a big deception of the devil is to make you think that what little you're doing doesn't matter, or it's not really that much, or you should be doing more, or maybe you should be ripping your flesh to pieces to the point where you got to go to the doctor. You know, but just get up and do it. Start it. You know, and do it to what you can bear. If you can't bear it to such a degree, just do it to the point that you could bear. And ask God to give you the strength enough to bear it. So sometimes the devil, I think, is a big trick with a lot of people. He means, this isn't doing anything. You know, I'm not, You could, as long as you have a good heart and offer up little things, yes, but you still have to do the prescribed mortifications also. But you know, you're right. Not everybody has to be. Yeah. Some people are called to do greater mortifications, like monks and stuff, or certain people, and others are mortify themselves in other ways. Fighting heretics is a mortification. The fact that you've got to, you'll read good stuff in here we're going to read on as we go on about Augustine even struggling with his. Thing, but so there's all different levels of mortification. But nevertheless, you can't escape it. You have to take on some voluntary mortifications, and you have to also accept the involuntary ones. And then God will ask God to give you the strength to be able to bear with Him. And then you find out, as we always know, that once God gives you that grace, it's easy. Yeah. Once Lent comes, then you watch when we do the one meal a day as we did last Lent. It's nothing. It's even preferable. It's even desirable for that period of time. It's even good. You'll find out how much time they say people, even all the time, people who are really like not mortified with, they're really are gluttonous, they eat all day. They really literally spend their whole time cooking and eating all day. Between meals, the three meals, everything is eat. You know, when you'll see he gets great orderly about eating on time, not eating in between meals, and this is, you know, and it's proper even. The other way, it's like you're living to eat instead of eating to live. You're not getting any work done properly. Okay. This recording is produced by Mary's Little Remnant, 302 East Joffrey Street, Truth or Consequences, New Mexico, 87901-2878. Visit our St. John the Baptist website at www.johnthebaptist.us or email me, Richard Joseph Michael Ibrani, at rjmi@johnthebaptist.us or send for a catalog to the just mentioned address.